Coming up on Chasing the Natty, week 8 of the 2025 college football season has come and gone, and we are here trying to dig through the waiver wire to find what additions we can make at the last minute as we can get ready for our playoff pushes. As always, we've got a couple of players to discuss on the freakout scale, and then we will get to what you guys want to hear about, and that is the brand new set of players to add from the waiver wire. All of that and more coming right after this.
Picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching for the end zone. Touchdown. What a start.
Give it to Reed, and there he goes. Nobody's going to catch him. Touchdown.
It's caught. Jeremiah Smith. Touchdown, Ohio State. The legend grows.
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast.
All right, welcome in, everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. Hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us in all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning and Tuesday night during the season. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com. Subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We got content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it is CFF, Devy, Campus of Canton Leagues, College DFS, Underdog Best Balls. If you play it, then we've got content. Whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. In fact, right now, if you want to support the show even further and directly, make sure when you sign up for one of our yearly membership tiers, you use that promo code Natty, N-A-T-T-Y, to get 10% off your yearly membership. Again, that is promo code Natty, N-A-T-T-Y. If you can't do that, totally fine. You can just show us some love by leaving a like, a comment, and a subscribe on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, just leave a 5-star review. Make sure you're following the show. Not only does that show us support, but also shows the entire game of college fantasy football in general a ton of support. If you have any further questions or want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. And y'all, I said it last week, but it gets more and more true each week as we get closer to playoff time. Like, it is go time. It's something we were kind of discussing in our CFF Slack a little bit, and just really when we were discussing the freakout scale for this week as well, so much just feels set in stone at this point, right? Like, I mentioned this at the start of my waiver wire article this week, and that is, like, there's not going to be that much change between now and week 14. If a team has struggled on offense, the rebound's probably not happening if they haven't figured it out by that. I'm looking at you, UTSA Roadrunners. If a team, like, teams can fall apart, right? Again, one bad injury can really throw things off, but, you know, teams aren't likely going to shift the way that they split their carries or their target distributions at this point, right? Unless an injury happens of some kind. That's really the only thing that we're kind of really looking for. In terms of guys just naturally emerging, we're not really set to see a whole lot of that going forward. And so that does make the waiver wire pretty much the hardest that it is going to be this season. It does not help that this week, upcoming week, week 9, is another one of these really, really tough, high number of teams on buys this week. So I'm guilty of this with a lot of the suggestions I give today. There's a lot of guys I'll be discussing today. They're on bye this week, but I do think they will be good for you down the line. Is there anything else that I kind of wanted to mention on that? I don't really think so. I think we just kind of dive right on into it. I will say that today's show is going to be somewhat truncated just a bit, mostly due to the fact that, one, like I said, the waiver wire was really hard this week, so we only have 3 quarterbacks and 3 running backs to discuss in feature today. Right, like I still have some honorable mentions, right? So you still get a good number of guys I'll be discussing today, but a lot of the guys that I was looking at today are guys we've discussed before on this show, so it doesn't really make sense to, like, have a whole feature on them, because a lot of the things I would have said last week, or Chris and Nate would have said 2 weeks ago, Nothing much has really changed from then. So you can just go back and listen to some of those episodes, and a lot of those guys are still pretty available, but I'll make sure to highlight those guys. And the other part of it is that going forward, unless I get this huge uproar and everything, I am going to be cutting out, at least for this year, the waiver wire traps going forward. And this isn't me saying that I'm never doing it again. I do think that that is a segment that is better used and better appreciated in the first half of the season, right? Because there is so much that is still moving around. So many things are still evolving, right? You guys want to hear, one, if there are new players, they need to hear what I say 1,000 times, which is like the things to look for that kind of tell you whether or not a guy's going to be a waiver trap or not. But the other thing is, like, so many of the guys that I would highlight here today, it's just me rattling off the same things that I would have been the last couple of weeks. So I feel like you guys know at this point kind of what to look for. You guys know how to look at a guy's, you know, history and to look at the larger context of the team and determine from that whether or not you should be picking up a player or not. And even then, like, because the waiver wire is so thin at this point, if there's a guy that I'm not highlighting today, more than likely it's because I don't necessarily have a super high opinion of them regardless. And so you can kind of almost understand my opinion on, like, a guy who scored very highly last week. If I don't mention him on the waiver show just going forward, probably means I would consider him a waiver wire trap more often than not. So yeah, that's going to truncate the show a little bit going forward. And it does kind of leave me a little bit more time to discuss some of these other players more in depth. Again, if there's a huge uproar that you guys, like, love that segment and you want me to bring it back, I'll bring it back. But for this week and going forward, at least until the end of the season, that part is going to be cut out. So with that being said, let's get on into it. Again, the stuff we do have here today is a freak out scale segment. We got two players we're going to discuss today, and then we'll jump right into the waiver wire pickups for this week, including the DSTs at the very end. So with that being said, let's move on over to that freak out scale. And the two players we had to discuss this week, again, shout out to the NIL tier over at the Campus of Canton Discord. This is our two players that were selected by our NIL tier over there, voted upon, are Bryson Washington, the running back out of Baylor, and Mario Craver, the wide receiver out of Texas A&M. Mario Craver, what am I doing? I should start with Bryson Washington. That's the guy that I mentioned first. So yeah, Washington. I normally don't do guys that got injured and, you know, then we're kind of like working from there. Because a lot of times I would just say, like, I'm not an injury expert. I'm not going to tell you how long it's going to take a guy to get back to, you know, being, you know, at their peak or anything like that. But Washington, I am willing to make an exception here because I am slightly worried as they're bringing him back. They are splitting carries quite a bit over there. Like, Knighton, the freshman, is getting a lot of carries. There's another one I can't remember off the top of my head. Let me see if I can look it up just real quick. Statistics. It was, yeah, Michael Turner. Michael Turner's getting plenty of carries with them right now. And so I do think that, you know, with Washington being injured, with him coming back and then bringing him back pretty slowly here, like, how much should we be worried going forward? And I think there is a legitimate reason to worry. I've got this at a 6. Again, reminded everybody, this is a scale of 1 to 10. So 1 is start with confidence, 10 is drop them. They shouldn't even be on your roster. I've got him at a 6. I'm the lowest among the three. Chris K's got him at a 7. Nate's got him at an 8. Nate makes sense because, you know, Nate, 1, doesn't think that Washington's even going to play this week. And so obviously that means you just sit him just because of that. But to me, like, even if I made my rating as if, you know, Washington by some miracle is going to play because he did get hurt again last week, so they may sit him this week. But even if he does play this week, I think that there's a legitimate reason to go ahead and bench him if you've got other options until we kind of get this figured out. Is this split carry, the split workload between Washington, Knighton, and Turner a more permanent thing that the staff's going to do in order to try to keep Washington fresh going forward? I don't really know. So I have this at a 6. Again, Nate's at an 8, Chris Case at a 7. Case pretty much on the same page as us. Again, the injury definitely worrying going forward. And then Mario Craver, I was so excited to discuss him. Let's go ahead and get to him as well. Craver is an interesting one, right? Because he started off the season so dang hot, right? But now he's starting to kind of fade, right? Let me see if I can look this up on my handy-dandy spreadsheet here. Yeah, through week three, Mario Craver was the wide receiver one. Through week six, he was the wide receiver nine. And now through week eight, he is the wide receiver 16. He is going kind of the wrong direction, very much kind of fading out here. Concepcion's consistently still getting some work here. But also kind of on the downtrend, going from wide receiver 16 to 20 recently over the last couple of weeks. Now, again, that's not nearly as big of a drop as Craver's seen the last several weeks. But yeah, we're all, once again, kind of bunched together. K's got him at a 4. I've got him at a 5. Nate's got him at a 6. We're all of the same opinion that there's a decent shot that Craver just kind of finally bounces back. He's still getting some decent volume, right? So it's not like he's like completely fallen off the face of the earth for the A&M offense. A&M offense is still putting up plenty of points every single week here. It's just, it is a little discouraging though, right? When A&M puts up 45 points yesterday and the best that Craver can come away with is 6 points. And then the week before that is 8.7 points in half PPR format. So you do kind of start to wonder, like, all right, when are we going to get some explosive games again? And to me, it's just it's just what Craver has done so far, right? Because, like, let's look at his history so far. 28.2 week one, 19.9, 30.2 the first 3 weeks. Then you drop off, go to 5.4, jump back up 20.5. 8.7, 6 points. I just think that there was a bit more boom-bust deal going on with Craver than we were kind of led to believe because of that early season production, right? Now, he's still a really good receiver. He is still probably worth putting in your lineups most weeks. That's why I've got him at a 5. But as I'll kind of explain here in a second, like, if there's a strong position on the waiver wire this week, it is wide receiver. So I would take this opportunity, if you have Mario Craver, just to kind of load up on some extra wide receivers in case this downtrend does kind of continue for him. You got some other guys waiting in the wings. Again, Nate's got him at a 6. Chris Gay's got him at a 4. So very much all kind of bunched together, averaging out about a 5 for Craver there. So that's it. A quick freak out scale segment this week. Again, we're so far into the season that, you know, outside of, again, injury and stuff like that, there's not really too many guys to freak out about. Or, you know, if a guy does have a bad week, we're mostly kind of okay with it, saying, like, all right, we'll just start him next week. Sometimes you just have a bad game, right? So we'll keep this segment a little shorter going forward as well. But let's get over to waiver wire, the actual pickups that you should be making this week. And, you know, with only a few weeks left in the college fantasy regular season, like I said, the market's really starting to dry up. I think, like I said, if you're going to have guys truly emerge down this stretch, it's going to happen either now or it's not really going to happen at all. Like I said, the chance of an offensive system greatly improving between now and the end of the season gets really slim. You're not going to see any major shifts in how that ball is distributed, either in the passing game or in the running game. But again, that doesn't mean there aren't guys on the waiver wire if you know where to look. There's just quite legitimately just less options now. There's just not as much guys to grab. And as is such, like I said, this show's going to be a little bit shorter. But, you know, I have 7 quarterbacks that we'll be discussing, or 8 quarterbacks that we'll be discussing today. And I noticed this the last couple of years that I've done the waiver wire, that I just kind of get to a point with quarterbacks where I just have to mention the same guys over and over again, to the point where there's some weeks where I don't even have quarterbacks to feature because there's just always that same group of guys that hovers right under 30% that I'm just like, hey, these guys are still good. These guys are still available. And like I said, there's no real guys emerging unless there's an injury. And I feel like we're right about that point because, again, the honorable mentions are almost the same as last week. And so, but I got 3 guys that I'll highlight there. At running back, very similar deal where some of the guys like Jordan Brunson I mentioned last week, I think are still the premier grabs on the waiver wire and are better than the guys I'll feature today. But again, it's mostly some of the same guys right now. And then Like I said, the strongest group I would say is the wide receivers. But unfortunately, as I also said before, a good number of them are on bye this week. So it's like this, you know, pick your poison kind of deal with each of these positions right now. So yeah, a wide receiver, if you're looking for immediate help, unfortunately, we're going to have some guys that are still available for this week, but you know, a good number of them are on bye. So all that being said, you guys know the drill. Every one of these guys is sub 30% rostered in Fantrax leagues. And yeah, let's find some guys that help you enhance your playoff runs going forward. So starting with quarterback, let's talk about Mr. Bear Bachmeyer, quarterback out of BYU, rostered on 26% of leagues. This past week, went 13 for 22, 166 yards and a touchdown through the air. He also had 11 rushing attempts for 64 yards and a touchdown. When we get to the end of the regular season for college fantasy and you're kind of gearing up for playoff runs, there's something to be said about having a guy that is very just consistent in getting you just a certain number of points every single week, even if they're never quite really a game breaker, right? CFF championship rosters of years past have been littered with guys like Joey Aguilar when he was at App State his first year starting there, Rocco back to Iowa State. Guys that just provide your fantasy team a really safe floor every single week. Because again, like one bad week from your quarterbacks can tank your entire season as soon as you enter the playoff, right? Like there's no stomaching one bad week from your quarterback that normally could get you 35 plus, but it, you know, all of a sudden he hits you with a 15 point performance. Boy, things can get bad pretty quickly for you. And I do think that is exactly where we are finding Bear Bachmeyer going forward. Like if I told you guys that Bear Bachmeyer is QB 16 on the season so far in total points, like would you believe me? Because like I wouldn't blame you if you didn't, right? Because he's just been so far under the radar. BYU, a team that just is hardly talked about at all in the grand scheme of things for college football. But you know, that's also just the power of consistency. You never really wows anybody. Nobody's out on Twitter saying like I won my week because of Bear Bachmeyer, right? But those that have him and those that have been starting him in the leagues that he is already rostered in, 26% of leagues, they're pretty happy with what they've gotten so far. Because outside of a 13.7 fantasy point performance against Stanford in week two, which was his first start against a Power 4 opponent, Bachmeyer's found himself finishing in the top 48 quarterbacks each individual week and has never finished below that, right? That doesn't sound super impressive, you know, top 48 quarterbacks, but the fact that you can just kind of lock him in to 20 fantasy points a week, which he has not gone under at all this season, again, outside of that Stanford game, that's worth a lot, especially down the stretch, right? Especially if you have, you know, a team that you're just looking to get through the playoffs by hitting, you know, 180, 190 points every single week. This is the guy, that can absolutely help you kind of get to that stable level every single week. Talk about Bachmeyer a little bit more. Again, a lot of his production does come through his legs where, you know, he manages somehow to find like 40 plus yards damn near every single game, it feels like. And it does not matter who he is going up against. He finds a way to get himself plenty of rushing there. And even better, those scrambles and runs often result in a score. In his last three games, Bachmeyer has found the end zone four times on the ground. His passing can leave something to be desired a little bit. You know, he's got less than 200 passing yards in each of his last two games. But again, that's often that right there is more often dictated by matchup and game script. Although you can pretty much count on him finding the end zone at least once through the passing game. So again, another safe floor statistic for him every single week. He's got some upcoming matchups. That might be two of the tougher defenses he's played against here with Iowa State and Texas Tech. They're not afraid at all to force BYU into a tough, low-scoring defensive battle here. Tech's defense is particularly worrisome. They're number one in the country against the run, which could remove some of the Bachmeyer's floor there. So this might be, or that might not be the best week to start Bachmeyer, but, you know, given your average Big 12 defense, Bachmeyer's been very, very good. And then also, again, like Iowa State and Texas Tech, again, we're talking about the rushing defense of Tech being pretty stout. Both Iowa State and Texas Tech are pretty average against the pass, you know, 54th and 63rd respectively. So there's still plenty of opportunity for Bachmeier to get his 20 points in each of those games. It's just you might feel a little more hesitant with Bachmeier in those games, but then afterwards it goes right back to being just pure Big 12 schedule. You love to see it. So let's move on to our second quarterback here. Let's go talk about Mr. Joe Fagnano, the quarterback out of UConn, rostered in 7% of leagues last week. He went 23 for 31 for 362 yards and 4 touchdowns. He also had 6 carries for 25 yards and a touchdown on the ground. A 5 touchdown performance for Mr. Fagnano against an ACC opponent in Boston College. So, you know, Fagnano is like another player that like consistently feels like he's under the radar in CFF spaces, despite him performing pretty well. Like, I think it's the UConn stigma. I think we typically think of UConn as, you know, just not being a great offense. And, you know, they're a team that's good for maybe, you know, 3, maybe 4 wins a season. But just quite frankly, if you haven't been paying attention to UConn, that's just not at all what they are this year. Like, UConn's a legitimately great team this year. They're 5-2 so far on the season, with both losses coming by less than a score. And it took absolutely Herculean effort from Syracuse to beat them. General, just looking at the stats, their offense is top 25 in both points per game as well as total yards per game. So really the question is, like, why wouldn't you want a dual threat quarterback at the center of an offense like that that's putting up so many points? Because when you look at it, Fagnano's top 36 in total points scored this season among quarterbacks. He's had his fair share of stinkers, don't get me wrong, but most of those have kind of come whenever Cam Edwards is doing a little too well in the run game. So Fagnano kind of takes a step back in those games. But when Fagnano hits, he absolutely hits, especially lately. He's been going 30-plus fantasy points in each of his last two matchups here. And as UConn continues to try to put together their second 9-win season in a row, I think their strategy is pretty clear. They're going to run it up on pretty much everybody, because why not? They're UConn. They never get an opportunity really like this. And so let's do it every single week. And even better, we don't really see UConn pulling their starters all that often, right? And that gives even more opportunities than most would get in a blowout. Their upcoming schedule is pretty solid. They got Rice, UAB, and Duke coming up in the next few weeks. Both Rice and UAB, I will say, are very susceptible to the run. So maybe watch out, you know, starting Fagnano in those games a little bit, because those could be games where, as we said earlier, if Cam Edwards is eating, Fagnano tends to struggle fantasy-wise a little bit in those games. However, that matchup against Duke a few weeks later is looking really nice for Fagnano. Like, Duke is solid versus the run, the 33rd in the FBS, but they are very weak against the pass, or 114th against the pass. So UConn absolutely can be in that game. They've already taken down Boston College, another ACC member. I don't think there's any reason to doubt that they can do it again. Add in the fact that even if Duke does get out to a lead, that just adds more expectation that Fagnano is going to get even more touches in that game. So I think Fagnano, given his upcoming opponents here with Rice, UAB, and Duke, there's plenty of good opportunity for him to be a spot start, especially if you are struggling with some buys in the next couple of weeks. So last quarterback we'll discuss here today, I think, is a guy we've mentioned on the show before, but I really want to reiterate him, mostly due to the fact that things have kind of settled out with Army here. And boy, it is just, God, Army, so annoying. They did this whole thing where, you know, Cale Helms, the quarterback we're discussing here, and Dwayne Coleman, they were saying, like, oh, they're going to compete every single week. We don't really know who's going to start it week in and week out. And it made it just dang near impossible to actually put a guy out there to start for college fantasy. I think, though, with 3 weeks in a row of Cale Helms starting here for Army, I think it's pretty safe to say he is that guy going forward. And any other talk is really just them, you know, doing coach speak, trying to keep Dwayne Coleman from transferring somewhere else. Not that I would really think there's any, you know, places that Dwayne Coleman could go, but regardless, Cale Helms, as we kind of mentioned, has been great. He's rostered on 5% of leagues, which is kind of crazy to me, but again, like, when there's a legitimate chance of him just not starting week in and week out, a lot of people kind of hesitate on that. But now, we should be pretty confident in picking him up, And he could absolutely be, I don't want to say a league winner, because he's not quite doing, you know, Bryson Daly numbers from last year, but his rushing is just absolutely nuts, right? Last three games, he has had 20-plus rushing attempts in all three of them. This past week, he had 39 rushing attempts all by himself. He's had 8 rushing touchdowns in the last three games. He has had 80-plus rushing yards in 3 of the games and 140-plus rushing yards in 2 of the games. Just his rushing alone is beautiful for just plugging into your CFF lineup and just going from there, right? His passing, it, obviously, as any triple option quarterback, is going to leave something to be desired, right? And he's not quite doing what Bryson Daly was doing last year in that respect, but you don't need him to. Just with his rushing alone, basically, he's hit 27 points, 28 points, and 32 points the last couple of weeks. Phenomenal, phenomenal pickup this week. If you're struggling at all with quarterbacks, I have a feeling that Helms is about to jump up in a big way in terms of rostership, especially considering the fact that after he gets done with his bye this week, the next two teams that he is facing are Air Force and Temple, both of whom are outside the top 110 in rushing defense. That tells me the Army can absolutely eat against both of those teams, and we should see some plenty of scoring opportunities in those games. So, yeah, Helms, great pickup this week. Let's go ahead and take a look at some honorable mentions. Alonzo Barnett, this is, I bet a lot of you are kind of surprised that I did not put him here as like a must grab off the waiver wire. And, you know, obviously in a best ball format, absolutely, right? If you got a league where you can pick up guys and you can put them on your roster, why not? In terms of redraft, though, he and this offense just don't have the consistency that I'm really looking for. It feels like they almost run a different offense every single week, and that makes it really hard to predict what we're going to get out of Barnett every single week. Now, if you're one of those people that want to just grab him and shoot for that 50-point upside every single week, I totally get that. I'm not saying don't grab him off the waiver wire at all. I'm just saying why I didn't make him a feature this week, because I think you should grab him off the waiver wire and have him on your roster just in case this kind of stuff continues down the line here. But, you know, just know that when you're shooting for that 50-point upside, you also can get a game like they had against Georgia State, who is, by the way, not a good defense at all. And they put up 14 points in that game, and, you know, Alonzo Barnett put up 9 total fantasy points. So just know there is a huge boom-bust opportunity with Barnett. But again, if you're shooting for that 50-point upside, I don't blame you. Brock Lowry, we discussed him last week. Not really much to add considering he's on bye this week. He's got Miami of Ohio this week. They're pretty tough versus the run, so that's a little worrying. But after that, he's got more action games. He should be good for the rest of the season. Nick Minichiuchi, the quarterback out of Delaware, once again, had a really solid game this past week in terms of yardage. You know, 400-plus passing yards, 13 rushing yards. Only one touchdown, though, because, you know, Byron Ellison's a vulture like you wouldn't believe. Might as well call him Vulture Ellison, because dude had, like, 9 total touches for 15 yards and 3 touchdowns. Meanwhile, you know, Nick here just got absolutely, you know, shown the short end of the stick on that. He should still be fine going forward. He's got MTSU this week. They're a defense that he can absolutely take advantage of, so we'll go from there. Tucker Kilcrease, not a great game this past week, but I think what I've kind of figured out with Kilcrease is that he is a guy that you want to start when you think that Troy is going to be in a negative game script, because in those negative game scripts are when Kilcrease kind of shines. Versus if they are winning the game, they're very likely to run the ball quite a bit. So just know that if you're picking up Kilcrease, to be very particular about when you start him. And then the last one here, Connor Wiegman, another good performance this past week, 34 fantasy points. He did not increase at all in terms of rostership last week, which makes no sense to me. He's got Arizona State this week, a little bit tougher of a matchup, but for the most part, he's been fine against any team not named Texas Tech. So I think he's still absolutely worth a pickup. All right, let's move on to running backs here. And like I mentioned at the top of the show here, we're only going to feature three running backs here today. We normally feature five. It's just real tough out there, y'all. There's not a lot of guys that I really love. But there are a few interesting ones, so we can get right to it. We'll start here with Kavorian Barnes, the running back out of TCU, rostered on 27% of leagues this past week. Great performance, 25 carries, 106 yards, and two touchdowns. If you've been watching TCU, and I'm sure a lot of us have in the CFF world, I'm sure a lot of us were really kind of hoping that when we saw TCU struggling to run the ball, that they would just kind of turn full air raid, turn, you know, Dwyer and McAllister and even Manjack a little bit into just weekly starts of the wide receiver position and just go, again, full air raid with their offense. But let's be real. The staff at TCU are on their knees thanking God that Kavorian Barnes is once again healthy, because now they are able to actually, like, confuse the defense on whether or not they're going to run the ball or throw the ball, because without Barnes, it was really pretty clear that they just wanted to throw the ball. Barnes, without a doubt, has been the most consistent running back for the Horned Frogs and was key in their win over Baylor, right? I mentioned the stat line already, over 100 yards. One could say that this game could be a fluke, but I personally call it the natural result of a crescendo. The last couple of weeks, like, Barnes has been, you know, getting about 15 touches each of his last two games, you know, against Colorado, Kansas State. And with each one, he was showing some improvements in both his health and efficiency. And that led to this last game where they just handed the ball off to him 25 times and said, go win the game for us. Right. I do think you are looking at the clear RB1 for TCU going forward. And we do know that Sonny Dykes is not afraid at all to ride just one guy. Just look at Kendre Miller and Amani Bailey in their last years at TCU. I think that it is now Barnes' turn, but you might be wondering, like, what's going on in the coming weeks? Like, Barnes, I do think, is going to get his opportunity to solidify his place as the RB1 and set himself up for a really good second half CFF run here. This week, he's got West Virginia, who's 109th in the country against the run. After a bye, he'll get Iowa State, who's pretty average against the run. So if he's still getting that, you know, 20, 25 touches per game, and he gets that against the Cyclones here, I think he'll have a good day with that. And then just at the end of the day, regardless, like, Barnes is a clear RB1, even if he's not always a workhorse, on a team that will score 35 points a game. I feel like there's very few safe bets like that this late in the season on the wire, so I would go ahead and grab him before it's too late. Again, he's at 27% right now. I have a feeling this will be the last week you can get him. Let's keep it in the Big 12. Let's talk about another running back here that's starting to emerge, and that is Mr. Rodney Fields, the running back out of Oklahoma State. I can hear some of you guys asking already, like, do we really want to trust an Oklahoma State player given the absolute trash dump that they have been this year? I agree. That kind of feels like a very messy proposition, but, you know, given the barren wasteland that is the running back waiver wire right now, I do think we have to become comfortable with being uncomfortable. But, you know, since Gundy's been fired, the Cowboys, well, you know, not good, I do think they've kind of stabilized some aspects. I don't think Sam Jackson's a good quarterback by any stretch of the imagination, but just having the same guy out there, I think, helps a lot. And the more clear example is, I think, settling in on Fields as the RB1 for the Cowboys here. He's seen 16 and 24 touches and 100 plus yards in each of his last two games, respectively. And I really don't see much to suggest that that's going to change. Pretty much every other Oklahoma State running back has not worked out this year between Khalib Higgs, Trent Howland, Ceci Vailahi, and Freddie Brock. Like, only one of those guys breaks 4 yards per carry, and Fields outproduces him by about 1.3 yards per carry. Like, Fields is getting about 5.5 yards per carry, which is pretty solid for as bad of a team as Oklahoma State is. Right, with no answer at quarterback, and I really the season all but punted, I think what's left of the Oklahoma State program really just needs to start rebuilding for next year. And even in games where the game script's going to demand that they pass more because they're behind, I do think that Oklahoma State, and I really saw this last week, seems more interested in learning how to sustain drives with a solid run game than they are really winning the game, right? Because, like, when you looked at the game this past week against Cincinnati, Fields got 21 touches on the ground. That's not a carry amount you would expect to see from a running back whose team lost this game 49-17. Now, I do know Syracuse kind of piled on a little bit towards the end, but even still, like, it does seem very, very clear that I think that Oklahoma State is just trying to basically create small wins. Just they go into these games right now and say, like, hey, can we sustain a drive? That'll be a huge win for us. Even if we don't get a touchdown out of it, like, let's build this team back up. And I do think they'll kind of keep this mindset going forward. As, like I said, they kind of work on getting back to basics, no matter how bad they're trailing on the scoreboard, which could be huge for Fields' volume going forward if they are just trying to make this their identity going forward. Speaking of coming up, Fields does have a tough matchup against Texas Tech this week. As I mentioned before, they're first in run defense, so I'd probably sit him for that one. But afterwards, like, he'll have games against Kansas, Kansas State, UCF, Iowa State to close out the season. Like, I'm not confident that Oklahoma State can really score more than two touchdowns in any of those games. But if they can, I would bet good money that Fields probably is one of those touchdowns any given week. So that's the other running back we'll discuss today. And then the last one we'll discuss here is Kendrick Raphael, the running back out of Cal. I had him as a honorable mention last week. I wanted to see, like, just one more good week out of him. And while I still don't love his inefficiency, Raphael's got the volume, right? This past week, 22 rushing attempts for 81 yards and a touchdown. He's got two receptions, so 24 total touches for just under 100 yards. Rostered on 13% of leagues. Again, like, just look at the last couple of weeks. 25 rush attempts versus Boston College, 18 versus Duke, 22 versus North Carolina. You're just not seeing guys on the waiver wire very often right now that are putting up this kind of volume. And so even though, like I said, I don't love Raphael's efficiency, I think he's worth going and getting out. And you got a nice matchup, especially this week against Virginia Tech. They're 99th versus the run. They're giving up about 175 yards rushing every single week. So I think Raphael can probably get to 100 yards in this game. The problem comes against the next 2 weeks, where you got Virginia, who's 40th versus the run, and Louisville, who's 23rd versus the run. That might be a little bit more, that might be a little harder. But also, we do see Raphael get some receiving work, right? He had three receptions versus Duke, two receptions versus UNC. So if they do get into a bad game script where they're not giving Raphael carries, maybe they can get him some receptions. And if you're in a PPR league, probably going to be happy with that. But if you're in a standard league, Raphael, as of right now, I would say is a pickup. Start him for this week. Maybe hold off on Virginia and Louisville the weeks afterwards. But PPR... grab him. I'd start him just because of the volume. So let's discuss some honorable mentions at running back here. We got up top there is the only new name among the honorable mentions. That's Kadarius Callaway, who has really kind of started to kind of figure some stuff out there in New Mexico State. They're running the ball a little bit more this past week. 18 rush attempts, 84 yards, and a touchdown. He also had one reception. He's got Missouri State this week, who's 88th versus the run. Missouri State's defense just in general isn't very good, so I think Callaway can have himself another nice week this week. Coleman Bennett out of Kennesaw State, rostered on 5% of leagues. Again, not much to say here because I discussed him last week and he was on bye this week, but he does play FIU this week, who is very vulnerable on defense, so I think that he can take advantage of that, especially if he continues to get his receiving work. FIU is bottom 20 in the country versus the pass, so Coleman can probably take advantage of some of those receptions he's getting every single week. The guy that I would say is probably still the most important waiver wire pickup this week at running back is still Jordan Brunson, running back out of Miami of Ohio. This past week against Eastern Michigan, 23 rush attempts, 122 yards, and a touchdown. He is, again, just one of these few workhorse backs you can get right now, and especially as Maxion really kind of kicks up here, I can expect him to have some pretty big games down the line. They got Western Michigan this week. They're pretty stout against the run, so maybe hold off this week for Brunson in terms of starting him, but I would definitely grab him, store him for the playoff push and playoff run down the stretch. And then, you know, Owen Allen, same thing as last week. He had himself another nice game this week, 10 rush attempts, 105 yards. Obviously would love to see the volume up a little bit more, but he still got the production, so that's all that matters. And then Ja'Kyle Middlebrook was on bye this past week. He's got Delaware this week. He's 85th versus the run. His last game, he has 17 rush attempts, 93 yards, and no touchdowns. I have to imagine a touchdown's coming his way pretty soon. So let us move on. Let us discuss some wide receivers. Again, like I said at the start of the show, this is the strongest group, in my opinion. So we might spend a little bit of time here more than the other positions, but we'll find out exactly how long it takes me to get through all this once I have a sip of water. And we go from there. So let's start off with the guy that I think among wide receivers, let me just double check real quick myself. Maybe not the most important one, but definitely the most important among the new guys that we're discussing this week. And that is Mr. Iverson Hooks, wide receiver out of UAB, rostered on 11% of leagues this past week. 11 targets, 11 receptions, 172 yards, and 3 touchdowns. By far, Hooks' best game of the season. So what happened? Well, what happened was that Trent Dilfer was fired. And there is something very heartwarming about seeing a program finally cut out, admittedly, a very avoidable cancer, right? UAB is already looking like a very different team with, you know, Trent Dilfer no longer running things. In fact, the rally was so strong that UAB did the unthinkable this past week and knocked off a ranked Memphis team as a 3-touchdown underdog. And a huge part of that was, one, they made a change at quarterback that made me wonder what the heck the staff was looking at practice, because Burton looked fantastic throwing the ball. And then number two, Burton's connection and reliance on Iverson Hooks. Like, the Blazers' passing game took a really big blow earlier this year when, you know, Corey Milliner, their former wide receiver one, effectively left the program. Like, I know they said that he's just away, but, like, let's be real, y'all. He's going to the portal. He won't be back this year. And what's crazy is that after Milliner leaves, they didn't shift their game plan to rely on their clearly really good wide receiver two in Hooks. Like, it took Dilfer being fired for the staff to say, like, hey, let's get the ball into the hands of our best remaining receiver. And then from there, like I said, Hooks gets his best game of the season. So, again, my thought kind of going forward is, like, I don't really see how this interim UAB staff can look at this performance and come away with any other conclusion than just, let's just keep feeding Hooks. Like, to be fair, it's not like they haven't been feeding him. Like, even the previous 2 weeks, he had 9 targets each. But to me, in this game, this new staff, or at least this interim staff, was much smarter about the way they used Hooks, and they actually let him go down the field quite a bit. Like, his ADOT in this game was like 14.2, and there are multiple games beforehand where they just don't even let him go past 10 yards down the field, very much like a safe dump-off option, and that leads to games like against Florida Atlantic, where he had 9 targets but only 5 catches for 50 yards. So it's like, I think Hooks is absolutely worth picking up. I think he'll be huge for UAB down the line. He's on bye this week, so again, sorry about that. But when he comes back from bye, this schedule, this AAC schedule that he has, is a ton of potential, right? UConn, North Texas, South Florida, Tulsa. Four of his 5 remaining matchups, I feel really comfortable starting him in. And even then, that fifth game against Rice, I'd say I might be willing to start him too if he's getting that volume regardless, especially in PPR format. So Hooks, very much a good pickup off the waiver wire this week. Let's move on to our second wide receiver here, and that is Mr. Jackson Harris, the wide receiver out of Hawaii. If you have listened, let me read off a stat real quick. This past week, he had 9 targets, 5 catches, 109 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He's rostered on 18% of leagues. If you've listened to me long enough on this show, you know that I have not really been a fan of Pafele Ashlock for some time now. And I knew that it was really a matter of time before there's just going to be a straight up better wide receiver on this Rainbow Warriors offense. And from what we could tell, Stanford transfer Jackson Harris has clearly become that guy. Despite having only 4 targets for every 7 that Pafele Ashlocks receive, Harris almost outproduces Ashlock on the season. Just simply put, Harris gets higher value targets and just does more with them. Like, since coming back from his injury, Harris has put together 3 straight 100-plus yard games and has seen 9-plus targets in all 3. He's had 16-plus yards per reception and an ADOT greater than 15 yards in all of those games as well. Just high-value targets, a ton of targets going his way. That's a recipe for some serious sustainable production down the line, especially as this offense, this Hawaii offense, really does continue to look really solid. Like, I legitimately owe Timmy Chang an apology. Like, this offense has looked way better than I thought it was going to be at the start of this season. So that's all fine and good, but like, what's coming up for Jaxon Harris? Well, again, unfortunately, Hawaii and Harris are on a bye this week. Again, I'm sorry, I didn't mean for so many of the best options this week to be on a bye. But then they get a dream matchup the week after against San Jose State. That secondary is bottom four in the country in terms of stopping the pass. And so, you know, the Rainbow Warriors should eat there. Then you get San Diego State, who on paper is a tougher matchup. But again, if this offense really is humming, I think they'll be fine against San Diego State. And then the only thing to kind of keep in mind with Harris is that he does have one more additional bye after this week. And it is smack dab in the middle of playoffs. So that's kind of unfortunate and just something to keep an eye on. But, you know, if you need help at wide receiver and just getting to the playoff, Harris is absolutely worth picking up right now. Third wide receiver to discuss today is Mr. Cooper Barkate. Wide receiver out of Duke, rostered on 24% of leagues this past week. 16 targets, 13 receptions for 172 yards. Did not find the end zone, but, you know, that kind of makes sense. He's been finding the end zone a lot for Duke recently. I cannot remember if Mox or Nate had brought up Barkate before, so I will apologize if they have done so. But I do think it's worth reiterating here. I know a lot of us are really big on Quayshon Brown before the season, but, man, Harvard transfer here, Barkay has really, really taken over this passing game. He's looked really, really solid. In games where he's not scoring a touchdown, he's getting a lot of production. In games where he's not getting a lot of production, he's getting a touchdown. A very consistent starter for you week in and week out. And quite frankly, he's got himself some really nice matchups coming up. Clemson, defense, not nearly as scary as it normally has been. UConn, the week afterwards, they're 81st against the pass. Lots and lots of potential for Barkay to continue here. I do worry a little bit because Duke does kind of spread the ball around a little bit, but they also throw, they're like set to throw like 450 times this year. So I think, again, just looking at Barkate's target numbers, you know, 4, 9, 16, he'll have plenty of big target games going forward. So we'll have to see. But again, just it's really encouraging that as we get down the stretch here that Barkate seems to be ascending rather than descending, especially with his involvement in this offense. If he can put together even remotely as close of a game that he put together against Georgia Tech here, but it can find the end zone as well, he'll have himself a monster game at some point here soon. So he is on bye this week, another guy that is just unfortunately on bye, and you got to work with that. Wide receiver number four, let's talk about Isaiah Satania. Again, I got another guy that I can't remember if Nate and Mox have brought up recently. But screw it. Again, I'm reiterating him as well. We all love Deion Burks. But, you know, those injuries to Oklahoma's boundary receivers, as well as the disappearance of Elijah Thomas. Seriously, what happened to that guy? Those have forced Burks out of that lucrative slot position and out on the boundary. That not only hurts Burks' production, but it has opened the door for Arkansas transfer Isaiah Satania here to come in, take over that coveted slot position in Benton Arbuckle's offense. And quite frankly, it's paying off, right? The volume has been there for Satania recently against SEC competition. Against South Carolina and Texas, Satania saw 11 plus targets in both of those games. He only saw 5 targets against Kent State, but, you know, to be fair, in that game, he only needed 5 targets to put his best performance of the date. Or his best performance to date, excuse me. And even though he got a ton of targets in those games, he didn't have the greatest days against Texas and South Carolina. But like I said, a lot of that had to do with those teams having some just really solid defenses. But in addition to that, Mateer was still kind of recovering from his injury. I don't know why they rushed him back so badly. Like, Michael Hawkins, I think, would have been fine against Texas in that offense. But, you know, whatever. I'm not the coach of Oklahoma. Anyway, but, you know, we are getting another week from that injury, so that's going to help the passing game. And what should help as well is the fact that Oklahoma's next two matchups are a serious breath of fresh air for this passing game. They'll be facing Ole Miss, whose defense was just diced up by Georgia last week and, you know, should be had by any good offensive coordinator, of which I happen to believe Ben Arbuckle is one. And then after that, they'll get Tennessee, whose secondary is in the worst in the SEC. So if his volume stays consistent like it has been the last couple of weeks, he should have some of his best performances coming up in the next 2 weeks before he goes on bye once again. So, last wide receiver here we'll discuss is an old friend of CFF who is starting to emerge in his final season here, and that is Mr. Jordan Hudson. No, not that Jordan Hudson from, you know, Belichick fame. Jordan Hudson, the wide receiver out of SMU, who has really put together some solid weeks recently. This past week against Clemson, had himself a really nice game. 10 targets, 7 receptions, 131 yards, and a touchdown. The week before that, 7 targets, 5 catches, 87 yards. And the week before that against Syracuse, 7 targets, 6 receptions, 47 yards, and a touchdown. I don't know if it's that Hudson's finally getting healthy or what, but he is starting to overtake Romello Brinson here as the lead wide receiver for SMU, really becoming that Rhett Lashley wide receiver one that we've kind of been wanting to see really for a couple of years now. I'm not entirely sure if that's going to keep up, but we're definitely going to find out in the next couple of weeks because SMU's got 3 matchups. They got Wake Forest this week, who's 18th versus the pass, but I'm not entirely sure that that's not a product of the quarterbacks that Wake Forest has been facing. They get Miami of Florida the week after that. I think that's a huge wild card at that point in terms of what happens in that game. And then week 11, they get Boston College, who is bottom 15 in the FBS in terms of passing defense. So Hudson should be able to eat well against there. Again, just keep giving me these 7 to 10 target games in a Rhett Lashley offense, and Hudson will continue to eat. His receiving efficiency has been great. Again, the game against Syracuse, not so great, only 7.8 yards per reception, but both against Stanford and against Clemson, Hudson had at least 17 yards per catch. Keep that up, and Hudson's going to be gold down the rest of the way. Wide receiver honorable mentions. Again, a couple of guys here from last week and go through real quick. Amari Thomas, great game for him this past week. 6 targets, 4 catches, 69 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Easily one of his best performances. He's got Arizona State this week, which is a bit tougher of a matchup, but given the fact that he's clearly becoming the wide receiver one for Houston here, I think that he'll be fine. Landon Ellis did not find the end zone this past week, but another solid day with 7 targets, 6 catches, 97 yards. He is going up against Texas State this weekend, who is 113th, bottom 25 in the FBS against the pass. He's continuing to be a deep threat for James Madison. I think this is another game where he can eat. CJ Williams still out there, rostered on 23% of leagues. He did well against Florida State this past week. 6 targets, 4 catches, 61 yards, and a touchdown. He does have Miami of Florida this week, which is definitely not the greatest matchup in the world. But again, he has Stanford's offense at times, and so I think he's worth picking up, if not for this week, definitely for some more stuff down the line. Assad Wasim, even though Zach Kittley and Kaden Veltkamp and this entire offense just really fell flat, so freaking flat against South Florida this past week, Wasim still giving me the metrics I want to see. 11 targets, 8 catches, only 56 yards, but really, as long as he's getting those, you know, 11 to 10 targets every single week from here on out in a Zach Kittley system, I will take that all day long. He's got Navy this week. They're 87th versus the pass. Given the fact that FAU should have taken advantage of, you know, South Florida's defense last week, I'm a little worried about FAU just in general going forward. Even though we love that offense, I think that Wasim's still worth picking up because if they do get back on track, he's that top outside wide receiver for Florida Atlantic right now. I don't think they will move away from him. And then the last wide receiver we'll discuss here is Mr. Braden Pegan, the wide receiver out of Utah State. Another good performance here from him. 8 targets, 7 catches, 93 yards. He also had 2 rushing attempts for 2 yards and a touchdown. Another good performance from him. He's got New Mexico this week. New Mexico's 103rd versus the pass. He is the top wide receiver for Utah State. This is a game, I believe, that has an over-under in the 60s. I've checked already. and both these teams are expected to score, I would bet good money on Pegan being one of those guys. Now, last but not least is a name that I don't have up on the screen, but I do want to mention as an honorable mention to the honorable mentions, and that is Harold Mack, wide receiver out of Eastern Michigan, a true freshman that really had recorded zero stats. I think he had a couple of stats against in Eastern Michigan's opener, but I don't think he actually recorded a reception or anything. I think it was just routes run and stuff like that. He was just on the field. From there, he just wasn't on the field at all. And then all of a sudden, this past week against Miami of Ohio, 7 targets, 6 catches, 179 yards, and 2 touchdowns. I'm not saying go pick him up because, again, that's an extremely small sample size for us to work with, but that's a hell of a way to announce your arrival onto the college football scene as a true freshman, to just go for nearly 200 yards in your first game, apparently as a starter for your school. So I would pick up Mac and just see what happens this next week. They do have Ohio, which is a bit of a tough out in terms of a passing game. They're 49th versus the pass on defense. But, you know, again, if Mac could even remotely replicate what he did this past week at any point this season, he's absolutely worth a pickup here. I'll let you guys decide on how much you're willing to risk that. Last but not least, we'll discuss one tight end here, and that is Brody Foley here. And, you know, this past week, 7 targets, 6 catches, 126 yards, and a touchdown. Phenomenal, phenomenal week for him. Yeah, I mean, again, at this point in the season, right, any big performance at tight end is going to catch people's eyes, because there really are no elite tight ends this year. I took a look. I was comparing tight end pointage this year compared to last year. And at this point last season, 4 tight ends had crossed the 100 fantasy points mark. And this season, there are 0. In fact, there are 0 that have even hit the 90-point mark. And so, like I said, that leads to some really big performances really standing out here. And the thing about Foley, though, is, and why I really want to highlight him, is that he's not a stranger at all to solid yardage. He's averaged 19.2 yards per catch this year. That is elite production and efficiency for a tight end. The crazy part is, though, that, you know, he isn't even targeted downfield all that much. I was thinking, oh, maybe this is just one of those things, kind of like Dallin Holker was, where he's basically treated as a receiver. He's targeted far down the field. His ADOT is 9.2, which is not, you know, bad by any stretch, but, you know, for a guy that's getting 19.2 yards per catch, you were thinking that maybe, you know, he's 14, 15 yards down the field. He's just really good at creating production. He has a team high of 10.2 yards after catch per reception. I don't blame the Golden Hurricanes for looking his way more and more often. Even though they lost, I have a feeling that, you know, Foley, if he continues to perform, that 7 targets he got in this game against East Carolina will become the norm more and more. And considering how efficient he is, that could turn into a really good tight end by year's end. He's currently sitting as a tight end 9 on the season. He's unrostered 94% of leagues. I personally think that we should fix that. So, yeah. Let's discuss some of these. Or actually, no, let me run through some tight end honorable mentions real quick. They don't have a page, but, you know, Bowden Green, Richie Anderson, Peter Clark, Joshua Long, Sam Rouge, all these guys are out and still available for pickups at the tight end position. They're all pretty solid. DST streaming options this week. Once again, we're just going to pick on some bad offenses here and some solid defenses that are kind of paired with that. Louisville, as we saw against Miami this past week, very solid defense there in the ACC. If I remember correctly, let me see. I had Louisville stats written down because I noted that they're not a team that you want to love. There we go. Yeah, Louisville 26th versus the pass, 23rd versus the run, so almost top 25 in both categories. They get Boston College this week, who's currently trying to make Grayson James still happen. That tells me that offense is about to go kaput, and Louisville should be able to handle them pretty easily. Miami of Florida is going up against Stanford this week. Stanford offense looking a little bit better. But given the loss that Miami of Florida had last week, I think they're going to look for a get-right game. A get-right game against Stanford helps a lot. And so I think the defense will show out against Stanford in this game. Boise State going up against Nevada. Nevada, a terrible offense so far this year. I think they are, what, bottom 10? Yeah, bottom 10 offense in the league. 14.8 fantasy, or 14.8 total points per game. Boise State's had a pretty decent defense so far this year, so I think they'll be able to handle that pretty well. Virginia's got a pretty solid defense, but once again, we're picking on the offense here. North Carolina, a bottom 6 offense in the country. Let Virginia do its thing. I think they'll hold North Carolina to very few points in that game. And then last but not least, I don't super trust Central Michigan's defense, but they are playing UMass, who is the worst offense in the entire country. Let's just keep picking on that. So, with that being said, we have come to the end of our show, y'all. Again, I appreciate all of you guys for listening. And I thought this was going to be a shorter show, but we are right here, right at an hour. So, well done to me, I guess, for nailing that time period. With all that being said, if you have not already, make sure you leave a like, a comment, and a subscribe. If you're watching this on YouTube, if you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show, leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus to Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you could think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here next Monday for more waiver wire pickups. Be also sure to tune into the Tuesday night live stream where we discuss start and sit questions. Until then, really appreciate you guys. Hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week, and good luck in your week 9 matchups. See y'all.